I'm going to read this thing. Welcome to the December 1st, 2016 Facility Standards Manual Public Review Subcommittee. I am Matt Kroll.
Michael Cabrini.
Keith Simpson.
Are all members of one or more affected groups and our respective corporations interests are on file in the minutes of the PRC. All right. Thank you guys for all coming. Appreciate it very much. I think we've got really some simple issues and
some simple solutions.
I always try and make things simple in my own brain and appreciate you guys coming out to talk about it. I've got really 4 or 5 items I'd like to discuss today, and I can just review them all at once. You can digest them, or we can pick at them one at a time, whichever you prefer. Paul, what do you prefer?
I'd like to at least hear the list.
Okay.
And then go one at a time.
So the 5 things that I want to talk about today are, and 4 of them are related to grading permits, is the reapplication fee and reapplication process and how we apply for those. The second item is the subject of early grading permits as it relates to the conditional approval and rough grading permits are no longer available, but the Keith.
The grading permit comes once you've got the stormwater and erosion sediment control approvals. Those two need to be done in order to get a grading permit.
Or conditional approval of the site plan or CPAP. Third item is a request that we introduce the ability to phase grading permits. As I understand, currently we do not have that ability. And the fourth item for discussion on grading permits is why do we have to submit a full set of CPAPs with the grading permit application? Unrelated to GPAs, I wanted to follow up at a request that I made at BDAG on street acceptance and bond release being processed by Loudoun County at the time of residency field acceptance. And we can kind of start with the easiest ones and go to the hardest ones last.
And so, just to add to that, I think the other item that we have talked about in the past with some people here that was coming from NAOP and some other groups was a pure grading permit application unassociated with a site plan or CPAP.
You mean a standalone grading permit application?
Yeah.
In what instance would that? I mean, we get those for like single family homes and tennis courts and basketball courts and swimming pools. Is that what you mean or something?
No.
Other?
I'm talking about for a 25 acre site where we're trying to get a jump start on the site work.
No.
I think that
we've already been kind of told
that's where
Joe and the other guys.
Right.
That's
gotcha.
What they,
so you basically you're looking at rough grading permit stuff kind of thing.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Right. Probably someplace where you know the site needs a ton of fill and
right.
If you can get an earlier start, then it can make a huge difference.
Yeah. So even though we've got this fast track process that we were talking about a second ago, some of the clients that we've got need to get to moving dirt even sooner than that.
They need a faster track.
Fast track is great, but they want to move dirt even before that. Yeah.
Super fast track.
Super fast track. Yeah. Well, that'll be a fun conversation. So I'd like to start with the reapplication permit process, because that's something that our industry has kind of recently been paying attention to. And really, I think it comes because before the rate change, and I think it was it 14 or 15, guys, when they we changed the base fee for grading permits?
January 14, I think.
Okay, that's what I remember too, Jim. So the base fee and the grading permit fees were generally low, and applicants would pay them to start work, and then if the work wasn't complete in a 3-year period, they would just pay them again. When the GPA fee was recalibrated in 14, that reapplication, the cost for the reapplication started coming to light. For example, when you do the reapplication fee is almost exactly the same as the initial application fee, and we weren't paying attention to it before because it was a low dollar amount necessarily, and when the dollar amount got bigger, that started raising some questions. So the scenario where it's
not the initial fee that we have an issue with.
Right, and we're not asking for a study of the application fee.
All right, but so help me understand, because I'm the new guy in the room and only been here a year. Why didn't you get the work done in the 3 years?
It's just function of...
I don't think that's an unfair question.
I think that's a great question, and let me clarify.
I want to understand the mitigating things that you guys encounter that impact the ability to complete the original permit.
To clarify that...
I'm not being...
On a subdivision, you know, we as developers will go in and build streets and record lots. And then home builders, and that usually takes, we'll call it a year for rounding purposes. And then home builders will come in and then start selling homes once the street is built. So all of the major grading is complete within the first year. All of the stormwater management facilities, the roads, the utilities, everything is built in that first 12-month period. Now it takes time for homes to be sold, built, and settled. And in the situation where we run into problems with not being able to finish in the 3-year period, is those all the houses haven't sold.
It's separate lots.
Right. So at the end of the 3-year period, we are left with an original grade permit application, and we may have half a dozen houses out of 50, you know, maybe 6 out of 50 that aren't complete. There is the 6-month free extension that the county does allow, but houses take about 6 months. So if you don't have those remaining 6 houses in this example started, then they say, no, you have to reapply. And it's the reapplication fee that we'd like to review, because
it's basically the same as the initial fee.
But can I jump in here, because I'm not seeing it that way. The way I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, when you come in for that first 3-year permit, it's for this new site here, right? And now you're telling me after 3 years, you really only need this site, but we're charging you again for the entire site?
That's correct.
So it might not necessarily be the reapplication fee. It's more along the lines of, should we really be charging the fee for the entire site versus what actually has to be done?
Remaining work.
Which is the phasing discussion.
Well, not really. It's a different discussion.
That's a different discussion.
Whether you phase or not, this is the job. If you let us phase this, we still have we do the grading permit. If we can do the grading permit for that, you get to 3 years. A 6-month extension isn't enough to finish, and we have this little bit left to do under the grading permit. And we're being charged for all of this as if we haven't done anything.
So I'm really going to show how dumb I am about learning Jim's world. If at the end of that 3 years, is the first permit just expired and you're actually getting a new permit?
It's called reapplication, as I understand it.
Same permit number.
Okay, same permit.
Same bond, same permit, but you have to submit new fees. It's actually just a paper application with a fee.
But where's that 3 years come from? Is that state code? Or is that just what we thought was a reasonable amount of time?
Well, it used to be one year back quite a ways. It was 1 year, and we weren't doing a reapplication at that time. So Mr. Wharton decided to push it the length of the, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's right.
To push it out to 3 years and then make folks repay to carry it on another 3 years.
Was the purpose of that to spur people to get stuff done? Was that an incentive to get it done?
Well, it was to cover our costs that was not being covered for things that languished into 5 and 6 years. And I know that we had a 1-year permit, and that's the way it was costed. And then we went through this whole fee study thing, you know, and that's when the fees went up back in 14.
It also meshed with the three-year performance bond choice.
Okay.
So that would be what we anticipated being the life of the project.
Now, grading permits don't have an expiration date, or they don't have an agreement with an expiration date. Well, I guess they do in the sense that the application has a 3-year expiration date.
Right.
But the physical bond.
But there's no extension a la performance.
So there's no reduction
on our side.
Correct.
When you go to a reapplication to reactivate basically that permit,
there's a reduction.
How does the workload change for us to process and administer that?
Well, there isn't a plan review,
because they're working under the same, like it's in, you know, like it's a CPAP, they're working under the same CPAP to try to get it finished, you know. There are the inspections, it depends, you know, it may not be as few as six, but it could be, you know. I mean, it just really depends on the market, because we've had, like in the downturn, I mean, you know, and that's why a lot of people put in for bond release. That was it, we're done. You know, we've prepped the lots, they're ready to go, but nobody's buying, so we're just gonna shove off. And that's what a lot of folks did. Mm-hmm. So there might have been half not billed out. So,
but they could, well, but they could never get their bond released.
Because yeah,
they
could.
Would never have accepted the roads because of how
not the performance bond. But
yeah, you can get off grading.
The ENS bond, okay. Yeah, as long as you're stabilized and controls are out, you know, and you're we're good with that.
You stabilize the lots, you can walk away.
I'm with you.
So is that a better option?
No, because we need to maintain the permit for our home builders or developers.
For someday when they get their act together to come in and do those lots.
It's not like they're getting their act together, Scott. It's I think it's just the time that it takes to for the market to absorb the loss.
I'm confused. Why do we have to maintain those as developers? Builders go in and get individual permits for every lot, right?
They could.
Or they could package, you know, if they bought us 10 lots, they could package those in a grading permit.
So basically they're under our grading permit.
Right.
But that's the way you guys like to do it. You take out the bonds.
Yeah.
And the builders just come in and build.
And if I'm Stanley Martin Homes, that's how I'll do it as well. Or if I'm in Elm Street.
So have you looked at this other business model?
Where yeah, I have. And the individual lot grading plan base fee is like $1,500 per lot. Plus, you know, and then you have to post individual.
It's $2,100 a lot.
21, thank you, Jim.
Plus bonding, right.
Now, if you package it as a subdivision, you would say you could do 4,100 plus disturbed acreage plus lot fee and be less than $2,100 individually. And we've done that with, especially when there's like a road only CPAP. I know this isn't you, but where the road gets built and the lots are sold to two or three or maybe just one builder, we've allowed them to package it, take it as a whole, so they don't pay $2,100 bucks 20 times in a row. They pay $4,100 plus disturbed acres plus a lot fee. It ends up being a savings to them. Yeah, so we work with folks on that deal.
Yeah, and I understand that. And each subdivision has its own business terms. It's just the thing that I'd like to solve for today, or at least have conversations to how to solve, is in a situation where you have an existing grading permit, when you've got 95% of the work complete, but just finished lots, because we can't submit for bond release, well, we can, but then you incur significant additional expenses by applying for a new permit. Because when you apply for, if you were to get off after 3 years and apply for a new one, then the engineer has to do a whole new plan and everything. So I guess I'm just requesting consideration for review of the reapplication, the analysis of the reapplication. So if a developer has all the infrastructure in and a certain number of lots, that the fee be based, the reapplication fee be based on the work, the work remaining.
So it would really be an estimate on whatever's not stabilized and completed, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And if it's, we can make it easy. If it's a subdivision, it will be the lots. If the stormwater management pond is built but not converted because all the lots aren't, you know, there's a lot of nuances. So do you see any problem with that, Jim?
Our overhead.
I don't know. You know, I guess that probably just, when we did the fee study, you know, it was trying to figure out the average time it takes to run a permit, you know, including the plan review and the bond estimate and all that, and then out the other end through inspections for the life of the project,
right,
in an average way. And, you know, we came up woefully short, and that's why the fees went up.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so whatever, you know, if you went to a lesser fee, or I don't know, do you extend for a year?
with a lesser fee, but let's just say if you took three of those years and you added them together, it would be more than 3 years at the 4,100, because, you know, the administrative time to process and all that stuff has to be considered in that whole collection, as do the inspections. So, I wouldn't be against some repackaging of the remaining work under a renewal, but that fee would not be cheap. It would not be cutting the 4,100 in thirds. It would be something more to make sure our administrative end is covered, mm-hmm. but it wouldn't be as much as the original permit fee. Mm-hmm. How about that?
Right, because your disturbed acre near lots would come down.
Right.
So if you've got, you know, just by example, I have a $10,000 fee, initial fee, for my GPA, if I could, and then with 4,100 base plus 6,000, we'll call it, lots and disturbed acreage, if I can get that lots and disturbed acreage down, and that base fee down, if it's 90% complete, I think that's a fair concession.
I mean, this is all, too, you know, it's all based on board supervisors, too. I mean, it would be an item that would have to go through, I suppose,
and
process. So
it would have to go through the finance committee.
So the 4,100 plus the disturbed area plus the per lot, that's for 3 years worth of inspections and paperwork and all that stuff?
And yeah.
So when we do the reactivation, we're doing another 3 years?
Yeah, that's.
But see, the interesting thing is, Scott, is, and I haven't studied this with a microscope, but the two fees, you know, at the beginning and the reapplication are about the same, as I understand. Jim, am I missing?
Yeah, when you do the reapplication, it is exactly the same as when you paid up front to begin the process.
But the thing you have at the beginning is you have a plan review element or a cost for...
Right, plan and bond review. Yeah, there's that piece of it wound in there.
So I'm thinking that with the reapplication, you could automatically just remove that portion of the base fee. Because you're not reviewing it again.
See, Matt, in the background of what you're saying and what we're trying to reconcile is we don't want to go to the board and say, hey, board, you normally got 100% of our time reimbursed by these fees. Do you want to take 80%? We're trying to avoid that conversation because that's not a winner.
Well, no, we're only supposed to be recouping our costs. So what... Matt and Jim just said it made sense. If we're not reviewing the plants again, and we're not reviewing the bonds again, then we shouldn't be charging in that fee, because that's over and above. So I think that's
an easy conversation.
So basically, aren't we just asking you to look at your cost on extensions?
Yes.
Yes.
And come back to us and just tell us
right.
what you think.
Yeah.
It's really, yeah, we can do a calculation on the time it's
for. Because, I mean
that part's the easy part, Mike. I mean, right. we can sit here today and almost subtract that out and
figure out.
The difficult part's going to be, okay, the next thing the board's going to want to know if we go to finance on this is what is the average time that it's going to be for the reinspections, how many reinspections you've done, what's the average number of lots, what's the average number of inspections, what are those costs? That's going to be challenging.
That's a science project.
Yeah, but the first part, I mean, I think it's a pretty easy exercise.
And
if you think that's worthwhile, we can, I mean, that can probably happen sooner than doing the exercise.
I don't even think, is that in the fee schedule?
I didn't see it.
Do we have reapplication in the fee schedule? Or that's something we made up?
We just probably consider it to be new grading permit application.
Right.
Oh,
yes. Okay. So yeah. We would have to add it to the fee schedule.
All right.
And it would have to be done in LMIS to be accepted, because that's where we are with this apply expired stuff.
Right.
It's all manual override.
Right.
So somebody has to sit there.
Right.
And I did two of them yesterday with Susanna, and it takes about 10 minutes each, because she has to go in there and do the little calculations for the percent. Because if we step off into the new LMIS, maybe something can be built in.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
that world will change in the new
system. That world will change. Yeah. But right now, if we do this, it's the same story. It's going to have to be manually overridden to get it to be accepted. Great, the board takes it, and we take it, and all that. It's all good.
We have to
announce it. But then comes the administrative.
Yeah, they learn how to do this.
Let me throw a curveball your way. Aren't builders posting individual VSMP permit applications with their own VSMP?
With their set of lots, yeah.
Right.
what if, instead of a reapplication, if you've got, how do you manage that? I'm thinking in my mind, after 3 years, your infrastructure is complete, but you've got remaining lots. Could you assign a cost for reapplication for a lot? Because that's really the situation where we just are getting burned. I didn't say that very clearly.
Well, we have to go back and say, okay, when you come back in and reapply for these things, what are our costs? That's what we have to base the fee on.
And that's fine, but I think you also need to look at, if it's not in the fee schedule for reapplication fee, what's the policy of deciding it's brand new when you have to start over?
Well, it's in a codified ordinance. The permit will last for 3 years.
But now we can do a
6 month for free. You're actually getting...
Right now we can do a 6 month for free, right?
Well, that, upon request of the director.
Correct. Right?
That's in the codified ordinance too.
And is that generally across the board okay, or is it case by case?
Depends. It's case by case.
Defining if you're really at 95% and a little bit to go, in 6 months you're going to get there, that's fine. But if something hasn't been started to go, you're going to be here in 6 months anyway. Why should I do this?
Right. It's January now.
But I think the answer to the other question, Mike, I think it's probably been, even though it's more expensive, it's probably somewhat convenient, because the other way to handle that is, okay, your permit's expired, come back in, file brand new plans, and go ahead and ask for the permit only for the portion that you need to finish.
We've done that.
And you have that option, but I just
you've
heard
done
you
that,
say
it's
probably...
base still is $4,100.
Right.
It's still expensive, so, and then you have to pay the engineer, and then you still have to go through the review.
And it's the engineer that adds expense, and that's what's not palatable about that, because the engineer has to create a new set of plans.
Or at least hatch out the old set of plans. That's still, right. I mean, yeah, we've seen it all, you know, whether it's new creation or hatching on an old CPAP to bring it into, okay, instead of this, it's this.
Yeah, you redline plans on a regular basis. Right. You have to.
Okay, so yeah.
I think we've committed to you to go look at this, right, and
that's cool.
Come back and report.
That'd be fine.
Yeah. Right?
Yep. Perfect. Let me skip over the early grading permits. Why are you laughing?
I'm just giving him a hard time.
Okay. Yeah. Tell him by the end of the year, is that what you just said?
I told him we'd have it by December 31st. That's why he gave me the very.
You long. Just didn't say what year.
Let's skip over the early grading for Ms. Keith, because I think that's a really complex item. The request to consider phasing a grading permit. So, as I understand how it works right now, and it might be just my inspector or system. So, Jim, I'll need you to tell me if I'm misunderstanding this, but when I submit a phase, and I may not use the word phase because I don't want to get mixed up with ENS terms, a section, that is section A and section B.
So you're sawing
a record plat phase.
Kind of a sawing a CPAP into parts, right?
Right.
With a record plat.
With a record plat. We're able to get two separate bonds for each section, with a subsection, I'll call them. As I understand, with grading permits, you can't do that, or I've been told you can't do that, because each bond needs its own permit number, and so you can either go in with an individual subphase or the whole section with all the inclusive phases, and what it does is it doesn't give us the ability to get off the subphase when the subphase is finished, like we are able to with record flat or performance bonds.
Yeah, and we don't like the ENS bond to be out there if the performance bond is still in place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what the direction, I mean, Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, but the direction we've been given from the county attorney, which, you know, we don't have the county attorney here right now, but, you know, the plan, the application, and the bond have to correspond. You know, I mean, they have to. If you had to take it to a judge and throw it on the in front of him to explain how this bond applies to this area being disturbed or worked on in the event of a bond call, that it would be understandable to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the three-legged stool. Got to have the plans, the agreement, and the bond all have to agree as to what they're doing.
Right.
So it's either break it into separate grading permits for your phase section and have that bond be that piece and then this bond be that piece, or bond the whole thing and, you know, you can develop within that your own, how you want to build it. But yeah, and then ask for a bond reduction once you've got this far that gets you, you know, and keeps bonds in place for the other part.
So there's pros and cons to both strategies, Jim, with going in for a big grading permit because you pay one base fee, right, plus disturbed area and lots. But if you break it into sections and you're paying a full base fee, even though that ENS plan has already been reviewed as a whole. So the drawback with doing individual is that, you know, you're paying the base fee twice, even though you may not, you're not really doing twice the work. Does that?
I'm confused where you're trying to go here. Do you want to get off the individual grading permit by record plat section?
Yes.
But you want to be able to grade greater than the record plat. You want to be able to grade the CPAP.
If I've got a hole,
right,
I want to put one GPA for this part and this part, and then I can get off this part when that's done, and then get off this part when that's done.
Without paying the $4,100 on both.
Right. Because, you know, we pay, when we submit CPAPs, we pay a base fee for the hole. We don't pay a base fee for each part.
But with it, but when you're doing the half, I mean, we have to go in on the plan and make sure, and Chad Dow's gone through this a number of times where, you know, he goes in and has to review the plan to make sure that what you're showing, even though it was an approved CPAP, what you're showing on that plan for that grading permit that pertains to the bond that's going to be issued is exactly depicted, you know, hatched, colored, chop, whatever, you know what I mean? He still has to do plan review to a certain extent to make sure, you know, the controls were approved. But then, along with that, when you chop, when something is designed as a whole, all right, ENS-wise, certain things may lead to the other half over here, all right? Right. So then we may have to call on you to redesign this part because it doesn't connect to that part anymore. So there is a plan review element in it when you do that. To make sure that the ENS controls will provide the, you know, protection they need to based on the division of the whole, and then to make sure that the plan itself shows what it needs to show pertaining to what it is you want to do.
Okay, and I think a bell just, light bulb just went off in my brain. It's very easy to quantify on a section, like with a performance bond, because you've got a certain linear foot of curb, you've got a certain area of pavement, you've got a certain, when you draw a hard line, it's not that.
But it sounds like you want to extrapolate that over to the fact that you want reductions on your grading permit.
Yeah.
Bond.
Basically.
I mean, your grading bond.
You can arbitrarily say the road stops here. You can't arbitrarily say the water isn't going to flow into the next section.
It's not that. It can be that clean if you phase it at the drain divides.
But you've typically broken up your performance bonds by curb returns where you can get streets accepted, and it largely ignores the watershed, the drainage divides.
Well, and plus it includes making accommodations for temporary turnarounds when you do that breakup so that they can stand on their own.
Yeah.
So there is a little bit of additional work road-wise that has to be done when CPAP gets broken into record plats.
I would actually say, Jim, tell me if I'm wrong here, that there's more work by phasing because you have to check on dependencies between the two phases.
Yeah.
So you've increased the workload.
Earthwork balance and whatnot.
Okay.
I mean there's even dependencies that are created when you're doing section on section.
Right.
You know, if they're adjacent.
Right.
You know, like where it's assumed that this section is complete when this grading permit comes in, and then if this isn't, then none of that infrastructure is there to receive the stormwater effluent from your treatment.
And therefore, you're messing up your bond release as well.
Yeah. No, I think I don't know how you guys just described that, but a light bulb went off. But, you know, because drainage sheds never are honored with a strict line, so that answers the question. I guess my only concern with raising that was, you know, it's hard to get much more than a 50% reduction on a grading permit. Like, we can go further than that with public improvements. Why is that?
There's no hard and fast. I mean, it's based on the judgment and the inspection of the field manager. You know,
but they magically always come in.
It's always 50%.
Some magic to that.
When I was doing it, I didn't always come in at 50%.
Or higher.
I try to figure out what the reality was. I mean, you know, with the completion, you know, I don't know. I can't explain. I get 16 people to work for me. And do I, like, look at every single bond reduction that comes in? No.
Actually, if I was to take a stab at it, I would suggest that the value of your grading bond is tied up in two things. The first is the erosion and sediment controls, because we're not judging the value of the infrastructure there. And the second is condition of ponds, which is very risky to us. So really, we would always have to include the outfall structure right up until the moment it's accepted by General Services as something that's not yet complete.
Right. And that's usually a big part of the bond.
Roger that.
I mean, and the other piece of this bonding thing, which has always been kind of a weird deal, is that 10%, 4% inflation factor. Basically, you might get a 65 or 70% reduction in the stuff that's on the list,
right.
But the 10% slides out, the 4% slides out as is.
Mm-hmm.
That calculation happens on your top part. The 10%
right.
slides back, the 4% slides back. You add it up, and it doesn't look like the 65% reduction.
Right. Right.
And there's another little piece of that, but
right.
that's just the contingency and the inflation factor are held as is. So that's...
Okay.
What I know, I guess.
Okay, well, you know, I'll work with my inspector to defer on that, further clarify on that.
So this is just a Willowsford issue?
No.
Okay.
I don't think there's anybody that has so many grading permits.
Okay, go ahead. What's your next problem?
Early grading permits. Gary, in one of the BDAC meetings, it was like in this summer, you said that we were looking at conditional approvals of site plans, and I asked you if we could also do the conditional approvals for CPAP. So I think the answer was yes. There's an commercial application, which I don't fully understand what the issues are, so
okay.
We'll let Keith.
Well, I mean, from the early grading permit with the site plan design, from the commercial side, I think it's kind of figured out. If the ENS is approved and the stormwater is approved and we have our VSMP permit, we could proceed with posting bonds and everything to get that grading permit.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's the conditional approval
is
I think what it comes down to. So you can solve, in theory, you can solve zoning issues and other items out there. You don't need those resolved to start moving.
There's actually two issues that do have to be resolved for conditional approval. The first is the VSMP review,
yeah.
And the second is zoning. The reason zoning is in conditional approval is it's always been there, because we can't allow any kind of approval of a plan where the applicant doesn't have permission to build the thing in the first place. And the only proof that we have that they do is the zoning approval of the plan. So those two things in place gets conditional approval, which we now have extended to CPAPs. And in the absence of a zoning review of a CPAP, we're saying that substantial conformance meeting the checkbox is the equivalent of the zoning review in a CPAP. But your question, I believe, really speaks to you would like to be moving earth even earlier than that.
Yeah, that's a separate topic from the early grading permit. That's a grading permit, like a new type of thing of a grading permit where you can submit a plan without a use.
Oh.
But that's different from what we're bringing up. That was the fifth topic.
Okay, so your topic right now
so
is
you're
early.
Willing to answer all the phone calls from everyone who's complaining that you're clearing that land without a use, your firms?
I understand.
I'm kind of tongue-in-cheeking it here, but we have a huge sensitivity in this community about clearing land without the use defined.
And we've been burned, frankly.
Yeah. So that's our heartburn.
Well, but that aside, and Jim, jump in here. I mean, our understanding of the regs is that before you get any type of grading permit, you need to have the VSMPs.
Exactly.
Right.
So that's our understanding. Mm-hmm. But I've heard that Prince William may do that differently, and
Yeah, that, and that's why it's kind of a different topic when we're talking about. But if I, if there's a plan submitted with a full ENS and stormwater management design for the denuded or regressed area,
right,
you can pull a VSMP permit. You don't need a use to pull a VSMP permit.
Hmm.
For the VSMP itself.
For the VSMP, there's no use associated. It's right. ENS and stormwater.
Right.
So as long as you have those satisfied, there's not a zoning component to the VSMP.
But how do you design those if you don't know the use?
You're designing it based off of the end use, which is managed turf.
Yeah, what they're
grass.
What they're talking about.
So we're cutting down trees and we're
putting. You have a use, but it's not the final use. Maybe.
There is no particular use. We're designing stormwater management for the condition that's there when you're done construction, which would be managed turf. Whatever's there ahead of time, I don't know. The end use would be managed turf. So you need to treat that for quality and quantity.
Okay.
Adequate outfall, all of the above. But the use issue is a zoning.
I'm following you now and the county's position. Based upon the way that we read the ordinances, is that prior to any type of excavation, you need a zoning permit. And basically, you need a use for that.
I'm also at the conundrum of managed turf 35 feet in the air.
If it was a large fill, you mean.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of related to dump scenario question. Say I own 10 acres and I want to clear it or regrade it just because I'm eccentric and halfway out of my mind, but I'm American and have rights to some rights,
like to look
of rights on that piece of property.
Yeah.
Do I need to, so if I submit a site plan with no change in use in it, it's just existing use, whatever, the use is no change. But I decide I want to clear the trees and grade it, will that site plan get approved? And obviously, if it gets approved, we get a grading permit. But that's really the, kind of an underlying question of what right is there to change grade or to clear.
We have to show some judgment before we accept your initial statement, which is, I'm eccentric and have the right to do whatever I want on my property. Right now, there's a sheen floating down the Potomac of unexplained origin that's obviously somebody doing something that has now affected off-site property owners, probably all off-site property owners, if you drink water. So,
what floating down the Potomac?
Kind of slime or sheen or something.
Charlie sheen.
This is a sheen.
Okay, my point in this is, your initial statement of I'm an eccentric property owner and I have the right to do anything on my property.
I didn't say anything.
Okay.
Some people have rights, and I'm trying to decide.
So we come back to, we have to watch out for all of your neighbors, and we have to watch out for adherence to the zoning ordinance, et cetera, et cetera. So there is some judgment we show. For example, in this clearing, you can selectively clear trees. Every property owner has the right to do that. When you do it by saying, well, I'm going to just take off the first 5 feet of topsoil and that will clear all the trees while I'm at it, would not be the correct way, would not be a way that we could support. So we, for example, have stopped a project that proceeded in that fashion. They could have cleared trees, pulling them out one by one. They started to do that, pulling them out one by one, but when they went to, let's just take off the first 5 feet, we had to stop that project. So eccentric gets into violation when you cross that boundary.
And I'm not talking about the violation, but clearly we have to meet the standards that are in place to protect neighbors. I wasn't suggesting that, but,
But if
say I've got a house on 20 acres and I decide I like it, I want my lawn to be different than what it is today.
Okay.
Can I go and clear and make my lawn different, not changing the use?
Right now, if you were under the existing rules to do more than the existing rules are, that if you were to submit a grading permit application and it had 50,000.
You mean Are you talking about fill or?
Yeah, two different issues, Gary. One's clearing and grading, the other one's fill.
Okay, if you were bringing in fill and it exceeded a certain threshold, and I think that threshold is 50,000 cubic.
Right, but I don't think that's what Kevin's talking about.
Okay, then it would go get a zoning review for, is this appropriate? And the zoning administrator would make that determination. The second one is if you just want to clear it and whatnot, and you're not bringing in 50,000 cubic feet of fill, it would be the manner in which you clear, and we come back to selective cutting of trees versus taking off the first 5 feet of everything. And we would make that judgment call.
I'll get to tell you the story of this position I'm in right now on a project. 25 acres. We've got a zoning issue that's going to hold them up. They want to start moving dirt. They would like to submit a plan which allows them to fill and grade the site for the future buildings. But they don't have the right to put the buildings on there yet. As opposed to what happens now sometimes,
because they haven't submitted a plan.
You have the right to design
the buildings. Right. We can do a fake plan that shows maybe a use that's permitted by right that we all know is fake, or we can put a soccer field on that we know is not going to be real.
Let's stop right there. We all don't know it's fake. We're not privy to that information here at the county. You submit a plan to us, our obligation is to review the plan in accordance with the regulations. Whether or not that plan ever gets built is up to you guys.
We're good with that, by the way.
Well, I mean, that's what's happening.
Right.
So now we know. People are bending the rules to get to that.
I don't understand why you have an issue.
Wait, that's fine because you've now designed the drainage.
No, it's not. You're designing to the rules.
But you've now designed the drainage to treat what could be a potential use. That's fine with us.
You may not have designed the drainage to the ultimate use.
Well, no, but if they've designed it for a reasonable, give best guess building or something like that, we're happy now. That's much better.
But when it comes to the real use, it'll have to be redesigned.
Yeah. We're,
anyway.
Then we're coming in and we're doing site plan.
Yeah,
I mean, there's things that are being done to get certain earthworks operations started early.
The motivation really is I can accelerate having a pad site that I can market.
It's having a site that's ready to go vertical when the user is there. There are sites and end users that are going to other sites or other locations, wherever that location is, because of speed to market.
Let me phrase this a little bit differently, and I have no skin in this conversation personally, but I think to ask the question more directly, if you have a piece of property that an owner wants to clear and grade, why can't that owner clear and grade the property for, if they meet all the zoning requirements under a by right review, what detriment to the community would it be to allow an applicant to submit a solely grading permit that meets stormwater management, the SMP, and zoning with no proposed use?
I'm curious how they would meet the zoning without having a proposed use.
I think that's the hang up.
Let's say you've got a zoning district in this example.
This one is a PDIP.
PDIP, right. So PDIP has, and I don't know this like I do others, but it has minimum tree canopy.
I think the county's position on this, and I don't have the language in front of me, is that there's language that talks about when we can issue a grading permit in a non-residential district. And I think that language says you have to have a use and show a use on a plan that's permitted in that district. So I think if we want to walk down and do what Keith is suggesting, then I think it's probably going to be changes to the ordinance to allow something specific like that to happen and call it something different.
Like a pad.
That's my two cents worth, but I haven't run that through the attorneys or haven't had this.
Yeah, I know. I know we kind of had a discussion on that a while ago, and when this kind of came about, I was talking to a few people yesterday, and they wanted us to bring it back up.
No, that's fine. We're ready for that. I think we need to have that discussion because, Paul's raised one issue from the county side, but I think Cody's raised another issue. It's like it's my property, if I do everything and I want to clear the pad site and I meet the BSMP regulations and all this other stuff, then why can't I do that? Because when I come in to build, I'm going to meet the county's requirements for landscaping and buffering and all that other stuff. So I get it.
if it's the way you, if it's written the way you described that the use has to be established in order to clear grade, then that isn't the right that I have. It's, and I wasn't, in my weird example, suggesting that I should or shouldn't have the right. I was really just questioning the way the ordinance is written today. Is that part of that bundle of rights that came with my property?
It currently is not for the commercial use, but you started yours as a homeowner. We had, you have some additional rights as a homeowner, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And the thing that we're on guard for here is that pad right now is not on the books, and two, as a proposed use right now, maybe a cover for, let's get an illegal landfill on the site, because we've been burned on that point.
Multiple times.
So, you know, pad in the sky, no particular use.
I think these are two discussions. The first discussion that I think Keith has brought up, and I think it's, I don't want to say legit because everything's legit, but I think what you're suggesting is you have a property owner and you're not going to have to bring in a lot of fill, or if you do, it's going to be balanced on site and you just want to get the thing. And I think that's one situation. Gary, I think the other one is where somebody really doesn't have a good site and they need to bring in 50,000 cubic yards to prepare. Now, at that point in time, were they really preparing the site for future development, or is it stockpiling?
Right.
And I kind of see those as two different
things. I think, and the intent of what I'm saying is, if there's going to be a grading plan that's going to show a level area, there may be a stockpile in part of the location, but it's not to say, hey, I can come fill 50 feet right here.
Right,
I
but mean, you're not, my if we are, you're not bringing all that plan. Dirt from another site just to throw it on yours.
I know that's happened. I understand that's happened.
But that's not what you're suggesting.
These are, you know, data center sites that want to get started early. These are things that One Loudoun and, you know, large corporation type of things.
Okay. I think that is something that is a long-term fix, because we have to add use to the zoning ordinance that states that a pad without the actual building is allowed.
Either an addition of a use to the each zoning district, or somehow modify the requirement of a zoning permit, which may be harder.
Yes.
That may be harder.
Right. I'm sorry. And just out of curiosity, whether I take this piece and put some buildings on it and then grade it out the way I want to and then change the building layout, or I do it the first way, grade it out, and then come in with another plan that shows the way I want it. How does that, I'm not sure.
Here's another example.
How does that help you?
Here's another example from a guy, not a project I'm involved with. They've got something right here that they can do, and they want to grade the rest of the project for the future buildings. And they're getting pushback because there's no need to grade the rest of this table because they only need this building.
But put buildings on the rest of the site, grade site out.
Yes, but
and then come in and do a revision to that site plan.
That's what we
I'm not sure I get what the problem is.
That is just what we like as a solution, but
you didn't like that.
It's more design up front.
So you can bond the building. It's not like you're bonding the building.
Up front, and you have to throw your utilities in there.
It's a lot of extra effort for stuff that's going to get thrown out. That's all.
Well, to me,
there is ways to do it. Same thing as what you guys are talking about, how to save money on some of these things. It's why go through that effort if we all know, and maybe you don't know, but on our end, we know that's not going to, it's not real. We're just doing it to get it ready for the future.
Well, I'm back to that. It's really about selling and marketing your land. It's not about building. It's, oh, by the way, you could go to Montgomery County, but it's going to take you X amount of months because you're going to have to go through this whole process. Once you, as the person purchasing it, go through it. However, here in Loudoun, I have this thing ready, and you can go a lot faster because the site's nice and level, and you're ready to go. The trees have been cleared.
Yeah, but if you have to come in and do a revised site plan, I'm still not sure, even if you're in the, how that.
I do think it's an advantage on the sales side.
It's saving months of earthwork.
It's definitely, you're saving. How much time does it take you to get from a new grading permit to pad ready to grade?
Right.
Once they to get the roads in for the lot. I mean, it's that. Because on a site plan, your plat has to be recorded before you can start doing work, unlike the CPAP.
Right.
So they can't get to construction.
Well, if we want to toss two more facts into this, that are actual considerations for these kinds of end users, typically if we're talking about a data center or something, they're relying on the leveled site for their, for the formation of their tilt-up construction. That needed to be ready in the very early stage, if not the first stage of their process. And
the site I'm talking about, the problem with the fast track is that the building, they're getting the building so quickly, they don't have time to get the pad ready.
Right.
So they're trying to get that flat area so they can start pouring the slabs and then the panels.
And what happens if they don't, you know, they get to the point where they're not going to build that data center, and now we've cleared 25 acres?
Then they've...
There's a stormwater pond that supports it.
That's a risk that the landowner takes.
Yeah, but there was a value to having the trees. There's a regulation about cutting down trees because there's a value to having the trees on site.
I think there's a...
And now we don't have a use for it.
I'm not sure you're saying that the right way. If they submit a plan that's in accordance with zoning, that you can do what's shown on that plan. It's like us clearing 25 acres and the market goes to hell, mm-hmm. and you sell four houses in the West City because it's already been cleared. We did a layout that met the approval of the county ordinances.
But now the trees are gone.
But there's nothing that says we can't cut the trees down.
Uh-huh. I think that's kind of the essence of it. People look at that and call us and say, why are all those trees down? And we say, we don't know. We don't have a use. Then they get mad at us because now the trees are gone, because there was an inherent value to those trees.
To the off-site property owners.
Yeah.
Right.
I never look at a property and count the trees and say that's a valuable property. Oh, actually.
I understand where you're coming from and why it happens, but I don't know if there's a...
Not your problem, right?
So, Michael,
that's not what I'm saying.
I didn't mean that maybe the way it sounds, but it really isn't your problem.
It's not their right to keep those trees.
So, is there a use you want to add to PDIP?
I know
it is. That gets you where you want to get.
But it's not just a PDIP. It's just not a PDIP thing.
Is there a use that you want to add to the zoning ordinance
grading. That
checks the zoning ordinance box?
Grading.
But that's not a use.
There is no use.
If you had...
Sod farm. Go back to that.
So, Keith, I think if we change the zoning ordinance to make the super fast track, that's not sellable.
But it's not even fast. It's you know, if the folks out there want to spend $100,000, $1 million to get a pad ready for... 150,000, 300,000 square foot building, they don't have that ability at the moment.
So you know how long it takes to get a zoning ordinance amendment done? A year.
That's why we don't...
It takes us another year to get the FSM amendment done. So we're looking at a two-year, I'm being facetious, but we're looking at a two-year modification.
You got to make up a year.
In which time you could have had, in a fourth of that time, you could have had the straw man site plan approved. Which is our current mode.
It's not a straw man site plan.
I think they're also looking longer term. I mean, in the interim, while those things are happening, they're still going to do what they have to do. But if people were amenable to that, it would be a nice tool, I guess, to use in the future.
Again, I think it goes back to not only is it time being wasted for me to design it, because you're reviewing plans that you don't know are garbage, to your point. It's kind of a waste of staff's...
We have a no plan left behind policy. No plan.
You carry those plans when they're on.
No, we appreciate that the work you want to be honest about what's going to be there.
It's saving everybody time and effort.
So how I think changing the ordinance is probably outside the purview of what we're trying to accomplish with grading permits.
Okay.
Is there any mechanism as it relates to how you treat these type of applications?
Well, they need to submit something within the parameters of what's approvable. And that's what we're looking at. And if it's approvable, we approve it.
We may be doing that.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I think, Michael, were you in that last meeting that we had with Lou?
No, I was there and Michael Larkin was there.
Okay, right. And I did send something out to Lou, and I think I copied you on that. And
yep.
You all have seen that, and I got an email back from Lou that said, this isn't dead yet.
Correct. That wasn't the intent of me bringing it up here, but
no, I know. And he said
I was talking about those guys yesterday.
He said he would get back to me because I am interested in seeing, you know, if there is something out there, if I missed something or if I'm wrong on something, I'm happy to have that discussion because I understand what it is you're doing. So, but I would like to get some feedback from.
I got to get back to find the examples. I didn't get time to read through the FSM. There was a thing that we saw that maybe with a few word tweaks might solve part of the problem. We'll get that to you.
And Todd, I think that some of this might. This is a Laura Edmonds thing that I loosely understand, but I mean her concern with this kind of approach to things is that when you go ahead and you design the site plan, whatever it is,
phase one,
whatever, and it takes and wipes out, you know, an area of trees mm-hmm. that when the ultimate design comes in could have been saved. You know, then you're required to replant and all that fun stuff.
Yes.
You know,
but then again, that's
is that where she's at with this?
Yeah, I think that's, you said it right there. That's too with legislative projects as well, where special exception or rezoning that the board's looking at, planning commission looks at, you know, there are issues for consideration deal with water quality, forest cover, some of those environmental things that could potentially be wiped out if we went down this road before the legislative application needed to be submitted. So I think that was one of the concerns.
I just wanted to make sure that piece of it was brought in. Just from my, you know, I haven't been in the environmental chair that long, but.
It's absolutely true. And I mean, Laura's brought up in the past, and, you know, and we got to come back and plant more trees. I mean, you know, if it's something that's going through zoning at the same time, I mean, that's a different ballgame.
Right. Right. But I think from our side, that is whether it's legit or you want to recognize it or not, that is a concern from our side. And so wherever we head with this, if we are going to make that type of change, mm-hmm. it is going to have to go through some type of process so that we can alert the board members and those folks to make sure they're on board with this. And then, and I'm not quite sure how to do that right now, but we'll figure something out. Because they, you know, it's an ordinance change. It will definitely go before them. So that's why I'm thinking, even if it's a tweak to the FSM, that's an ordinance change, and we need to let them mm-hmm. know and be up front, and then we'll have to make that decision on that.
Oh, yeah.
So what is the next step? Just
so I think it's back to Lou and your
yeah,
group.
Yeah, we got to get something back.
Defining what you really want to do through what mechanism, or in the interim, do you want to just make sure you give us plans that are approvable within the
meet the use.
Right. Okay. One of the fourth items, and this is really not a major issue, but you know, when we submit grading permit applications, we have to submit full sets, Jim, and I think the ENS plan is only really
three
sheets. You know, I think the set only needs to be limited. You know, usually
that's not. I mean, the reason we want full sets. I want a full set for my field managers. I want a full set in the office. We stamp a full set for you to have in the field, two sets actually. And we can take stripped down sets for you guys. But my folks are out there and they'll get these wacky questions about all sheets of the freaking plan. And if they don't have a full set to open up.
I see. Like they have an off-site property owner ask a question.
Yeah, or you know, somebody on-site comes to them and says, well, you know, not that they have to give the answer, but they don't have a clue unless they have that plan to flip sheets and go, oh, I see. Let me go ask a project manager. And they take it, and they take the plan, and they walk in, and they go, okay, here, Fred, look at this. You know, and then they go, oh, the question is, you know, how far between these light poles, you know, or what's, you know, some spec question about sidewalks or, so that's why we, you know, do that. It's just, so we have a, and then we get the phone calls here where somebody asks a question and we go grab our office set and we layer out so we can figure out what it is they're asking about. So then we can kind of put a hand on the right resource to kind of get them directed towards. So that's two sets. Your two sets, I don't really, you know, as long as you have ENS sets stamped, they need to have a cover sheet, soils map, ES phase one, phase two narrative, you know.
That's all you need for the grading.
Yeah, for the stripped, you know. But usually it's just easier to ask for four full sets, and then everybody, you know, is. What we're really concerned about also is that in the field with the contractors, many times there are just huge problems with which set are you using, the bid set, you know, some other version. At least we know if we're giving them a full set of plans. Go ahead, Gary.
Bingo. That's what justifies your cost. Last month, Stephen Pickerell discovered by looking at the full set of plans, parking garage is here. Why are you uncovering this ground right now outside of the limits of clearing and grading, which took the full set of plans for him to be able to pin down? And it turns out they were starting to build another plan, not his plan. So that wouldn't have been discovered if he only had those seven sheets that pertain to ENS.
I mean, our folks are the face in the field for a long time before they start coming up out of the ground, you know. We get questions about blasting. We get questions about, you know, adjacent landowners have questions about what's going on with this. So we're doing the field inspection and all that, and we're getting with the folks in the field, you know, and showing them what we need done. But you get an adjacent landowner that comes over and goes, well, what are they doing here, you know? So you can roll out those plans and you can flip sheets and show, you know, here it is. It's just a tool that allows us to kind of, one, head off problems or research problems, you know, and get the right resource information. That's really the deal with it.
Yeah, you know.
And sometime in the next 36 months, this problem gets reworked because we're going to go 100% electronically into the system. And you're not going to be paying to submit a whole bunch of paper copies here because you're going to be submitting electronically. The real test technologically for us is now how are we going to take those approved sets and have people be able to pull them up in the field. Now we're doing, actually we've done some on that, some testing on the larger iPhones, and while you can't see the whole thing, you sure can maneuver and you can read sections of it very easily. And maybe we're going to go to a pad or something else that's got a bigger screen, but
you know, I mean, right now a lot of our folks are, you know, they're using the tablet kind of a laptop, and a lot of them have downloaded the plans into it, so they don't have to carry a truckload, you know.
That's our hope. Our hope is to
just eliminate this printing cost and hauling all these sets.
It's the consultants that I've been getting, hearing from. Just they're like, I got to print 95 pages.
Yeah, we don't want you to do that, but that's what we're stuck with right now.
Okay. All right. Well, that's
We have a file room full of paper that we need to get rid of. So we're with you. If we could do it without paper, we're going to do it without paper.
Okay.
And the good news is it's moving forward. The Finance Committee last week pretty much directed the Budget Office and the County Administrator to place funding in the capital plan to replace the system with an electronic plan review system included.
Great.
So I'd like to see that funded by April 1st so that we can get started.
Yeah, it's certainly exciting. We're excited about that too. Okay, that's an easy one. At BDAG, I brought up the request from industry regarding the BDAG street acceptance and the processing of final bond release. That's going to be a kind of turning question, I think.
I think he's going to weigh in on that heavily, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually...
Because the way I understand it, Matt, is... If there is a delay, and I know where you guys are, it's like, well, it's never happened in the past, but there is that delay, and if something comes up and VDOT at the last minute says, wait a minute, we're not going to accept that, then where's the county? Because we have no bond.
Well, the request is not to release the bond, Mike. It's okay. To start the bond process.
That's right.
And that
that's
was right. The clarification that Fareed made was, you know, Loudoun County doesn't physically return the bond until the street's in the system. Yeah. But if it takes six to nine weeks for Richmond to push a button,
you were more correct at 6 to 9 months.
Originally,
that was a slip.
Originally, that was actually accurate.
If bond committee said something like,
"Yeah, we can conditionally based upon something like that," I mean, that would say
everything lined up.
I mean, we could do that. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think that's a problem.
How do we initiate that?
Is that just a practice that, or a conversation with Ron?
No, we really don't want to do that. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
I sort of tell you that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we have the notification.
When we proposed to the county attorney's office, we could implement it this way with these constraints, and if, as soon as they sign off on it, we could do it.
Yeah, I mean, we just have to really just think about that at bond committee.
Yeah.
If, you know, if these, you know, we have a section that says, because it can't be for all releases, it's got to be specifically for something that VDOT is involved in.
Correct.
So we have to add a section of bond committee agenda that said these are approved for release conditionally upon VDOT acceptance. And then we have to work out quality assurance team mm-hmm. part of it so that they can confirm that VDOT has done their final acceptance of it. We've done the resolution that's gone to Richmond and all that stuff.
That's
and then
cool.
Once they push the button, then Mike can sign the letter.
It's actually the board resolution that I think is, you know, by the time you get to the board resolution, you've got field acceptance, you've got package acceptance, you've got VDOT entering into their DAC system, and you've got the county. That's like a good, I would think, a good point to allow the submission of the bond release process. And, you know, it may not seem like a lot to, you know, in conversation, but if it takes us 2 months to get Richmond to push the button, and it takes 2 months to get Loudoun County to push the button and push the paper across the county, that's 4 months. So if we could shorten that to 2 months, you've just shaved off, you know, street acceptances, we'll call it a 9-month process. You've just shaved 2 months off that 9-month process.
Yeah, I think for us, and I might be wrong, tell me if I'm wrong here, Gary, that maybe the milestones are VDOT field acceptance, and then...
That's what you're asking for. Right now it's not...
I would say board resolution would be a much lower risk for the county.
So when does the resolution...
Usually after the VDOT enters into the DAX.
It goes onto the agenda.
So what you're asking for, Matt, is once the board does the resolution, then you can submit your request for bond release?
Or the county would start to process the bond release, because it does take 2 months for that to process.
What are we...
Yeah. I think we could.
What part are we not... I'm missing the part.
Oh, we're tying it to Richmond right now.
Yeah, but that's not... He's not saying release. He's saying starting the process. Start the process way before that.
You know, when are we starting the process?
Well, we're,
now,
it's
right?
Two different processes. Everybody thinks it's the same thing, but it's the street acceptance process and the formal bond release process. So we're not really doing anything with bond release until we get... You know,
so when you say we're not doing anything with bond release, Gary, what's that mean? We're not taking it to bond committee?
Yeah, it's not.
That's correct.
They're not bringing my guys the paperwork to go on the bond committee agenda until VDOT has
put it
already into the system, right?
Okay.
Correct. No, what we're really doing is working off homeowner complaints the whole time. Only kidding, I didn't mean to go there.
So,
who are these homeowners and what are they complaining about?
I'm on the list.
I was thinking that, you know, it doesn't matter, it really doesn't matter to, maybe I'm wrong here, but maybe it doesn't matter to us.
We can start the process at any time.
Yeah.
Right.
This is entirely doable.
I think it's doable. I'm just wondering how much time it's really going to save. But, you know, if it saves a month, obviously it's worth it to you guys.
Because of capacity.
Is 2 weeks worth it to you guys?
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
And at that point, we really don't want the bonds. We want them out of our inventory anyway.
And guys, I'll say this, and this isn't all sincerity. You know, we're all working together, and there are times that sometimes bonds slip through. You know, without the final check, there may be cases, and that doesn't happen often, but it does happen accidentally. I'd like to try that on a trial basis, so that we can work with the bugs out. If there are bugs, you can kind of pull it back. You guys can pull it back if there are situations where quality assurance is, it's not getting stopped.
Here's the thing. If we are holding that bond until VDOT says, we took the road, then there's no risk.
Right.
We're not really, all we're doing is getting paperwork.
They're moving
right.
They can hand you the bond back when VDOT says
I don't,
it.
I, I don't really see a whole lot.
That's what you want. That's what you want to accomplish.
Yeah.
I also don't see the reason for a trial or selectively doing this, because we're not waiting for you to trip up so we can say, aha, we're not going to do this now. We'll always have a safeguard.
Okay.
So yeah. I don't see that.
Yeah, we always have the bond.
I mean, but, you know, the larger issue, if you could change what's going on at VDOT,
we're working
would
on
really
that, Paul.
Appreciate that.
Paul, we are working on that.
We're working on that.
We trust me.
We are working on that.
Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah. At that point, the county's risk is almost nothing. I mean, we're down to fees at that point. Because if VDOT has field accepted the road, all we're talking about is
in the perfect world, yes, and what the county attorney would come back with if they were here would be, in the imperfect world, some glitch causes them to not accept it, and then we are left plowing snow through a couple
but
of seasons.
But we're still not letting go of the bond.
Right. Now we're not. And that takes the risk off the table. We're good.
Yep.
Right? So
because the initial
thing
was,
doing is, all we're really doing is quality assurance team is putting the release
check
on the agenda pending VDOT final acceptance of the road or whatever language we want to put in there.
And check me if I'm wrong, but the original version of this discussion was, how about bond release upon field acceptance?
Right.
Which would, of course, be the risky part right that the county attorney would have from.
We heard you guys on that.
That seems pretty logical. The only hard part is Rick has to flip that process on its head, and he has to figure out how he's going to say that bond in Mike's inbox to sign the letter, or no, to my guys, so that we can get the letter ready for Mike.
If we had another category in bond committee where it's in a holding pattern, that would do it.
That's exactly it.
Okay.
So we would segregate those
check
releases separately so Rick would have a list of them. We might have to make a new database condition for that so that Rick can
sort.
He can sort by this and knows which ones.
Anything that has an SMRA goes in this category.
No, I don't want to do it like that. I want to give it a separate status so that Scott Sandberg can write a query so he can pull up all the ones that are in that category so that Rick can have a checklist and watch for those to come back from VDOT. So that he could give those to my guys so that they can generate the release letter and then put it in front of Mike and release the bond.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
How much time do you got? Thank you, guys.
Can I just ask, are we done on the VDOT side?
As it relates to Fareed accepting field acceptances? Yeah.
You're done locally.
Right, no. Yeah. I just want to make sure this isn't an agenda item for January.
No,
right?
all we're doing is we're taking the exact same pieces of the process and we're just moving two things ahead of two other things.
Right.
All the things that we've done before we're just doing them in a different order.
That's fantastic. What's the next step to follow up on this? You guys are going to look at reapplication fees. You're going to look at the possibility of a super fast track early grading permit.
Super special.
Or did we decide that you just have to submit a plan with the use?
I thought that's what we decided, but we're going to wait to hear back from Lou.
Thank you.
I'll get with Julia Blue.
And you can tell Lou that both Paul and I said it was in his court. He'll appreciate that. We're waiting on him.
Phasing of grading permits, I think it's too complicated to change. And we understand why you need the full sets. And do you guys need to get back to us on changing the bond release?
Yep.
Okay.
Bond committee.
Yeah, we can raise that at bond committee and
next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday. And I think we can put something in place. We can get back to you all on that. I think that's the easiest thing.
Okay.
To accomplish.
So we'll just wait to hear back then before we set up a new meeting on those two items. Okay. Really appreciate your guys' time. Thank you very much. Very helpful.
Thank you. This is my best training and learning experience on the job. Come to these experience on the job.